This is News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Dave Ross is off for a couple of days. I'm Paul Harris, proud to be behind the microphone. And happy to introduce you to my friend, Dr. Phil Plate. Phil is an astronomer who has come to be known as the bad astronomer. Not because he's bad at what he does, but because he recognizes a lot of other people don't know what the heck is happening up there in the planets, the stars, the asteroids, the galaxies, the universe. I first met Phil several years ago when he came on my show to debunk a Fox primetime show about man going to the moon, an achievement I consider mankind's greatest scientific achievement. And I think Phil kind of felt the same way and was insulted a little bit by these idiots on this show who were claiming that it was a moon hoax. And there are still people who continue to promulgate that opinion. Thank goodness we have Phil and his bad astronomy blog to debunk them. Since that first encounter with Phil, we've gotten to be friends and met several times at the Amazing Meeting, an annual event put on by the James Randi Educational Foundation, of which Phil has recently been named the new president. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about his new book, Death from the Skies. Phil, I'm trying to pronounce it as if there's an exclamation point at the end here, but it's a little tough on the radio. It looks a little better in print.
Well, thanks for getting the name right. That's a step up from a lot of interviews I've done, so there you go.
Well, I'm happy to have you on the show here to talk about it. The full title is Death from the Skies, These Are the Ways the World Will End. You become an extremist alarmist now.
Yeah, that's me. I'm a doomsday crier. I've got the sandwich board, and I'm on the streets with my bell saying the end is near. It's the only way I can make good sales on the book, I think.
You know, you and I had breakfast a couple of years ago, and you were working the beginnings of the book at the time, and I asked you, give me one example of what is happening out there in the universe that could eventually kill us, and you said to me, Paul, two words, gamma rays.
That's right. There's a type of object out there called a gamma ray burst, which is probably the most terrifying object in the universe. And when I talk to people about this and they say, you know, you're going to write about asteroid impacts or the sun or whatever, it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, that's chapters 1 and 2. Wait until you get to chapter 5. And gamma ray bursts are these, they're basically exploding stars. And even just your average everyday exploding star, which is an enormous event. It's this huge thing that could, you know, if it happened too close to the Earth, could wipe out life on Earth. And I should point out, there are no stars close enough to really damage us if they blow up. But there's a subset of these stars, these are called supernovae, there's a subset of supernovae called gamma ray bursts. And instead of exploding in all directions, you know, in a spherical blast, it actually focuses the energy into these two beams, like laser beams that shoot across the universe. And if you're within even, you know, 7,000 light years of these things, which is a pretty fair clip, if you're even that close, this thing will damage the ozone layer and can flood us with subatomic particles. And if they're closer, it can, yeah, it's a lot worse. They can set fire to everything, rip off our atmosphere, boil the oceans. It's a lot of fun thinking about. And happily, these things are really far away, so we don't have to worry about them. But it is kind of fun to think about what would happen.
You know, as I was reading through the book, which is a fascinating read, even for non-scientists like myself, because you're able to put things in layman's terms so well, I kept thinking to myself, Hollywood is going to get a copy of this and have about 13 new sci-fi movies based on the non-fiction that you've written about here from the world of astronomy.
Yeah, right. And the amount of royalties I will make from this? Yeah, zero.
Well,
there are lots of movies that are made, lots of documentaries, TV shows. You see this all the time. And they're always talking about asteroid impacts, or the Sci-Fi Channel has always got their monster of the week, their ridiculous made-for-TV movie about, you know, the Minotaur, or the half-man, half-ferret, or something weird like that. And, you know, you could make movie after movie, disaster movies, from asteroid impacts, from solar flares, gamma ray bursts, a black hole passing through the Earth. And a lot of these have been made. And even the documentaries, even the science documentaries that they make about these, tend to have lots of mistakes. And it just slays me, because the science of this stuff isn't that hard, at least to explain the situation or to make a dramatic story, the last thing you need to do is exaggerate the effects of a gamma ray burst. You know, you're talking about melting half the planet, so it's hard to overestimate the damage you can do from one of these things. And yet they still screw it up, and I see this all the time. It makes me crazy. So I'm hoping this is sort of my clarion call out to Hollywood. It's like, if you're going to make a movie about this, send me an email. Maybe I can help you with this.
You want to be their technical advisor. That's what you're saying. You're looking for a new
career. Who doesn't want to do that? A friend of mine is the tech advisor for Battlestar Galactica. How awesome is that? I'd love to do that for a movie or something like that, but, you know, I'm not holding my breath.
Now, speaking of movies, you talk in the book about asteroids as possible things that could kill us. We did have a couple
night,
of
literally.
Movies. I'm sorry?
Go bump in the night, literally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We did have a couple of movies that came out pretty much at the same time called Armageddon and Deep Impact, both of which were about asteroids that were on a collision path with Earth and were going to doom all mankind. In I can't remember which one of the movies it was, they sent a spaceship up to land on the asteroid and blow it up with nukes, which you say in the book wouldn't be possible.
In fact, both movies, Armageddon and Deep Impact, they came out in 1998, both have sort of the same plot, a giant object. In Armageddon, it was an asteroid. In Deep Impact, it was a comet. And it's going to hit the Earth, so we send up astronauts, they plant bombs on it, and they blow it up. It turns out that's probably not the best way to do it. First of all, sending a manned mission on a, you know, a several months long journey is not something we can do at all right now, and you don't really need to. Second, planting a bomb on an asteroid, you know, you're talking about something that might be a mile across and made of iron, and you could lob nukes at that thing all day long, and you're not going to harm it. And third, if you do it too late, it's the pieces are still going to hit the Earth. At the end of Deep Impact, they blow up the comet, and all of these pieces hit the Earth, and it's like, well, congratulations. Instead of a billion gigaton explosion, you now have a billion 1 gigaton explosion spread out all over the Earth, which is no better.
Yeah.
You really want to the basic premise here. What you want to do is to make this thing not hit us. So you could, if you can blow it up, you can blow it up. But probably better to push it out of the way. And so what scientists are thinking of doing right now is actually taking a probe, putting it near an asteroid, and then letting the gravity of the probe itself, this thing might weigh 10, 15, 20 tons, the gravity of the probe will pull the asteroid a little bit, and you can tow it using gravity. You don't even have to connect to this thing with bungee cords or whatever. The gravity of the probe itself will connect it to the asteroid, and you can slowly pull this thing out of the way. And they say that with even a few years of warning, we would actually be able to pull an asteroid out of the way so that it would safely miss the Earth, which is pretty fantastic.
I'm just crossing off bungee cord on my list of ways to save the planet.
Don't invest in, you know, in bungee stock.
Are you telling me that we actually do have an anti-asteroid defense plan, or that we have people who do think about that sort of thing?
We have people who think about it, and we have a plan. What we don't have is funding and hardware. Right now, as the shuttle is being phased out and these rockets are being built, we're going to have a 4 or 5 year gap without the capability of launching heavy hardware into space, which is a bit of a problem. Hopefully, we won't see anything headed our way during that time. Even if we did, that's probably not enough warning for us to be able to actually to get out there and move it out of the way. We're talking about, you know, we need 10, 15 years warning. But hopefully by then, you know, we'll have Constellation, these new rockets that NASA's building, and we'll have the technology to be able to build one of these gravity tugs and literally save the planet.
Well, the planet's been around for a pretty long time, and mankind has been on it for a lot longer time than Sarah Palin would ever believe, but we've never had to worry about this sort of thing, at least for humanity's sake. As we go along, are we just more knowledgeable about what's up there that is a threat, or is there more of an actual threat?
We're just getting better at spotting these things. The first asteroids were only discovered 200 years ago, and those were enormous things hundreds of miles across. Now, typically, the ones that are being discovered are less than a mile across. And that's still big enough to do a huge amount of damage if it were to hit the Earth. We're not talking about dinosaur killer. That thing was 6 miles across and caused a global extinction. But one a mile across could easily take out an entire state, for example. If it fell over in New York City or London or Moscow, it would be an epic disaster. And we're getting pretty good at spotting these things. We know that there's nothing that's going to hit on that size range for the next few decades. But, you know, something even 500 yards across, something the size of a football stadium, something the size like that, could still take out a city. And those are the kind of ones that are very difficult to spot. And so there are people out there looking for this sort of thing. Our telescopes are better. Our detectors are better. So we are finding them. The question is, will we find them in time to be able to do something about them? And I hope so.
It's News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Harris talking with Dr. Phil Plate, whose new book is called Death from the Skies. These are the ways the world will end. And when we talk about this, we talk about all the things that are part of our universe, part of our Milky Way galaxy, part of our solar system that are threats eventually, possibly. I guess it's a small p, possibly, for a lot of these things. But are there things that are happening in space on an even regular basis that you and other astronomers go, whoa, I didn't know about that?
Actually, there are. It's kind of funny when you talk about what can affect us here on Earth. There are asteroid impacts, solar flares, things like that that will happen eventually, but any given time are sort of low probability events. Then there's stuff that we know is going to happen, like the sun will expand into a red giant. Eventually, some other star will pass close enough to the Earth to cause us damage. But those are things that will take billions, trillions, even quadrillions of years. And so even though they're inevitable, they're not going to happen for a really long time. And so you don't have to worry about them too much. But in fact, there are things out there we don't know that much about. There's dark matter, which is this it's a type of matter that we think is pretty much unlike the kind of stuff that we're made of. It's not rocks, it's not hydrogen, it's not iron or anything like that. It's some weird, bizarre kind of subatomic particle that we don't understand yet, and yet we know it's out there. We can see its effects, and we know that it's the vast majority of matter that's out there in the universe. Now, it's not dangerous to us. It's not like going to rain down on the Earth and mutate us into zombies or anything like that, but we don't know what this stuff is. Yeah, sorry about that. But there are events. We see flashes of light that don't seem to fit the normal profile of exploding stars, flares from other stars, things like that. We don't know what they are. They're probably not dangerous. If they were dangerous, we wouldn't be here now. These, you know, an event that happens once every 1,000 years is not terribly common on a human scale, but in the universal scale, that's, you know, every day. And so if something were to wipe out life on Earth, if it were something you'd have to be worried about, we wouldn't be here to worry about it. So there you go. So I'm not too panicked about most of this stuff.
I have to ask you, again, put this in layman's terms for me, because when you were talking about things that could happen, you talked about a star moving close enough to Earth to hurt us, or moving close enough to our solar system to hurt us. And when you said that, I thought to myself, stars move?
Well, the Milky Way galaxy is a collection of about 100 billion stars. All the stars that you see in the night sky belong to our galaxy. You can kind of think of it as being like an island universe. Or I tell people it's like New York City. There's a downtown where all the action is, and we live out in the suburbs of the galaxy. And
but when I look up at the night sky and I see the stars moving, I know that that's because the Earth is moving, not the stars.
Right. The stars rise and set, and that's just because the Earth is spinning. But if you were to watch the position of the stars, like say the constellation Orion, which is starting to rise these days in the early evening. If you were to come back night after night for thousands and even millions of years, you would see those stars move around because the stars themselves are orbiting the center of our galaxy, and they're shifting their positions. And so over millions of years, the stars get closer and farther apart from one another. So right now, the nearest star to the Earth is the Alpha Centauri system, and it's 4 light years away, roughly. But in a million years, some other star might be closer to us. And the thing is, even over the 10-billion-year lifetime of the galaxy, it's pretty rare for any two stars to pass close enough to each other to affect each other. So even though there's a huge swarm of stars out there, and you give it plenty of time, the odds of any two stars getting close enough together to actually, you know, say, physically collide are almost zero. But that's only because the galaxy is 10 billion years old. As far as we know, time's going on forever. So when you start talking about time going on for not 10 billion years, but for 10 trillion years, 10 quintillion years, 10 octillion years, huge numbers, something that's even statistically rare now is going to be commonplace over that length of time. And hopefully, you know, by then the sun will be gone, the Earth will be disintegrated, and we won't be around to see it. I don't know if that's a hopefully or not. I don't know if that's a happy thing or not. But that's the sort of statistics we're talking about. You hardly have to worry about these things because it just takes so long for them to happen. It's just not going to happen in your lifetime.
Dr. Phil Plait's book is Death from the Skies. These are the ways the world will end. We'll come back and talk more about it in a moment here as the Dave Ross Show continues with Paul Harris on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Harris filling in for Dave Ross and talking with Dr. Phil Plait, whose new book is called Death from the Skies. These are the ways the world will end. I'm just trying to hype it up as much as I can for you, Phil.
Thanks.
You mentioned earlier in the last segment that we have to eventually get ourselves able to travel long distances over long trips for a long time. For us to go to Mars, for instance, is not as easy, and I put that easy in air quotes, as going to the moon was some nearly 40 years ago. And we have our astronauts now up on the International Space Station doing all sorts of experiments and expanding that and trying to turn urine into potable drinking water and all of that. How close are we to eventually launching somebody into some sort of interplanetary mission?
Well, that's a pretty good question, and it's a little bit difficult to answer. Getting to the moon, the astronauts were only in transit for about 3.5 days, something like that. Then they were on the surface of the moon for a few days and then came back. And so they didn't need to worry about recycling air. They had to filter their air. That was the whole point of Apollo 13. They were running out of breathable air. But recycling water, they only have to do that for a few days, as opposed to a few months or a few years, which is really hard. You need a much larger rocket to be able to do that, and that technology is difficult as well. And then there are radiation issues. The sun puts out blasts of radiation. And it could easily kill an astronaut if they're not protected. And on a 2-week journey to the moon and back and on the surface, the odds of that happening are pretty low. But the odds of it happening on a trip to Mars, which is going to take 6 months just to get there, let alone being on the surface for however long they're going to be and then coming back, over that length of time, the odds of a solar flare or some sort of radiation event happening, they start to approach certainty. And so you really need to understand these dangers and be able to build the hardware to protect yourself from them. And I don't think we're there yet. To be honest, I think getting to Mars is something we should keep our eyes on, but we should be looking more at going back to the moon and building a base there. And then the technology that we build and learn how to do on the way to a relatively nearby outpost, that's one that's only 3 or 4 days away, we can apply that knowledge to going to Mars later once we understand it better.
And are there materials on the moon where we could actually have a long-term base there and people could stay there for more than just a couple of days?
The answer to that is maybe. There's some talk that there might be water frozen on the moon in deep craters where the sun never can shine in and heat the surface up. And a lot of people are arguing that. It seems like every couple of weeks I hear, you know, some new result that says, yes, there's water at the South Pole, and then, no, we haven't seen it. And it's not been positively detected, and it may be some time before we figure that out. But there is oxygen locked up in the surface of the moon. There is hydrogen. If we can learn how to mine the materials on the moon, we can, in fact, create a base and get all the sort of the volatiles, or what they call them, things that you use up. We can get that from the moon itself. And we don't know how to do that exactly, but NASA's working on it. They even have these prizes. They will give companies money if they can figure out how to do this, because then NASA doesn't have to worry about it, and they can just use this technology from the private industry. It's a great idea.
Dr. Phil Plait's book is called Death from the Skies. These are the ways the world will end, and his Bad Astronomy blog, which is now hosted by Discover, is one of the most popular science blogs on the web. What do you get, like 1 million hits a year on that, Phil?
Actually, closer to that per month. About 750,000 traffic page views a month.
There's terrific stuff on there, and he's recently been named president of the James Randi Educational Foundation, which you can find at randi.org. We'll have to have you back and talk a little bit more. Good luck with the book, and thanks for your time today.
Oh, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Paul. Thank you.
Dr. Phil Plait here on the Dave Ross Show with Paul Harris on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.